Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
This really underscores something that's really, really critical that needs to be considered, is that 90% of all the groups that expressed an interest to us of in Escambia County and some kind of a product development in downtown Pensacola said that they require or prefer a headquarter hotel that's attached or is walkable within 1 to 2 city blocks. And so that feedback is really important because it ties together the need for a full service hotel to serve as a convention center headquarters hotel if you're really trying to penetrate into the convention marketplace. Next slide, please.
All right. This is the presentation discussion, the joint meeting, not that kind of joint, between the Escambia County Commission and the Pensacola City Council last week. Dealing with the Bay Center and which of all the different menu of options that they want to pursue. And this is Bill Krueger, and it's important in this conversation to understand which group is speaking, because sort of each group has their own perspective and or faction, if you want to think of it. But Bill Krueger represents CSL. They're working for Legends, okay? So, you know, the Bay Center operators. And their view, this is not him saying that they need to have a hotel. This is that if you're going to do a convention center as the second building, remember there's several pieces of this puzzle. Part number one is the upgrades and renovations to the Bay Center itself to make it what it needs to be competitive in, you know, the current marketplace, particularly with regard to concert venue size and the ability to handle various, you know, numbers of trucks and tonnage and stage and, you know, there's a whole bunch of things. That's part one. Part two is a second building behind the Bay Center. Is it going to be a convention center oriented facility, or is it going to be some kind of a combination hybrid event slash sports facility where they can do indoor tournaments for like volleyball and, you know, cheerleading and things like that? And then, so that's part two. Part three is, are you going to build a second sheet of ice in yet a third building to the east of that, like on the corner? The renderings have been out on the corner of 9th and Gregory. I have to think through which one is which way. And then the fourth piece is, do you or do you not have a hotel close by or on the property, connected or not connected by a walkway, or how easy is it to get back and forth between particularly the convention or sports facility and that hotel? And then the fifth piece is parking. You know, you're going to get rid of parking behind the Bay Center, and you already have a parking shortage. So if you're going to build greater capacity and get rid of parking, you've got the double whammy you've got to solve. Okay, so those are all the pieces. So Legends is saying, look, the people that we talked to said an anchor hotel is key to making a convention center work. What else?
So overall, in terms of all these other interviews and surveys and everything that we did with regard to the market demand analysis, really highlighted the fact that the demand segments that express the most opportunity in terms of unmet pieces of business that we could compete for were more the smaller conventions and conferences and trade shows, in addition to a significant interest by amateur sports. So when we say amateur sports, we're talking about of the indoor variety that largely would be basketball, volleyball, dance, cheer, wrestling, pickleball. There's a whole bunch of those kind of sports that oftentimes will go in some kind of an indoor environment like that. And there's really a significant need for that.
So the opportunity for indoor sports is high. The opportunity for small conventions is high. The opportunity for big conventions is not as high. And it would require some things that are going to make the facility more dedicated to conventions. You're going to have a hotel to make that work of a certain sort in order to have the kind of ballroom that you want. And so we're kind of having to pick between the convention and particularly large convention with a hotel direction, or the sports events, conventions during the week, you know, party in the back, kind of business up front, you know, sort of approach. And so that's the first fork in the road, so to speak, for the leadership in our area to pick.
The theory really landed on the fact that we could create a convention product, but we would definitely need both concrete floor space, carpeted space, and then hotel space all connected and all together.
It might not seem like it, but flooring is one of the key issues here. And, you know, how nice do the columns and the ceiling look, right? The appearance, for the bigger and the more significant the convention is, the more they want it to not look like a warehouse. But the more you're going to do sports, the more they really don't need carpet and, you know, high-end finishes. And in fact, you know, that stuff kind of sort of gets in the way because, you know, you want floor space. But by the way, the kind of floors they need depends very much on the sport. Every different sport, to a degree, requires a different kind of flooring, or at least some of them require different kinds of flooring. And that's important to understand as well, because if you build a convention center, it'll take up all the space. It won't have the room to store all of those materials. But if you build something specifically designed towards the sports alternatives and the variety of sports, you can actually build it with all of these things available that can be rolled out on demand, basically. And so, again, you're kind of having to pick one direction or the other on that second building.
And so then the recommendation really coming all out of this really landed on a flexible new event center type project that has an enhanced FF&E package. And what that means is you've got the, you know, as a part of your building, the construction of that project, you're also purchasing all the equipment. So portable hardwood, maybe you have portable synthetic turf. You've got a bunch of nets that separate the spaces and create some additional spaces, but you've really got you got retractable seats and other things like that. So you've got this very highly flexible building that's really being designed and thought about in lots of different markets throughout the country in our experience. And it's really a way to maximize the level of activity and also maximize the revenue generation within a building like that.
Okay. So that's the event athletic space. You want to think about it that way. Then the question is, how do you handle the conventions, especially trying to go toward, I mean, it won't handle the sort of the biggest ones because you're going to be limited in your size to a degree. But what could you do that would add on to that facility that would give you more convention capability? Because that'll already have some. It'll already have some. What could you do beyond that?
And an important part of that strategy would then be to lure and attract a full-service 200-key or larger full-service upper upscale chain scale hotel that would be attached via Skyway or connected to an adjacent parcel.
So it's going to have to be close. And if you think about, if you've ever been to a convention, you know, you don't want the hotel in Warrington and the convention center in, you know, Chemukla. You know, you don't want them. You want them right next door to each other. The closer, the better, right? Because you basically want to be dropped off at the space and then never leave that space, except, you know, maybe if you go walk into restaurants or bars or things like that.
And when looking at all the survey results from the convention planners that we talked to, a typical full-service hotel, if you were able to secure that under a P3 transaction, you would have the right amount of carpeted space to marry with this size of the event center space, which is concrete floor, but highly flexible for other activities as well. And when you put all that together, you're able to leverage the private sector investment in the hotel product to secure their carpeted space and marry that with the concrete floor space in the event center. So you're able to really go after where all the meat of the demand is in the convention business in terms of our program recommendations.
So what they're envisioning, this is the Bay Center Operators Legends Global. What they're envisioning is step one would be the upgrades to the Bay Center are a given. Okay, $71 million, that's something they're going to do. That everybody believes that needs to be done. Step two, that building, second building, as this kind of hybrid event athletic space. Step three after that would be the hotel, because that would bring you greater opportunity to use that hybrid event athletic space. And then the hotel itself would bring pieces to that puzzle that would basically add on leverage, add on profitability at that point. So Ted Ant, who was then one of the next speakers, was speaking for, now they call themselves the DMO, and they've said that for a long time. This is the hoteliers. This is like Innisfree is part of this group. And technically in Florida, you have this thing where a DMO is, you know, like kind of a legal term of art. And Visit Pensacola is technically the DMO for us, because they're the ones who are designated by the county as responsible for spending the money that the county raises through bed taxes to do advertising and promotion and all of that. So, it'd probably be more technically accurate to call them the hotel organization instead of to call them the DMO. But, you know, they call themselves the DMO. That's how it's referred to in the news. So I'm not going to quibble over it. And they've been calling themselves that for years. In fact, this group was one of the groups, as I recall, that was involved in, you know, really fostering the split up of the chamber back, you know, 10 or so years ago, 11 years ago, into the three groups that it is now, which is Florida West, the economic development arm, marketing organization that we call Visit Pensacola, and then also just, you know, the more private oriented sheltered entity of the Chamber of Commerce. So Ted Ent says, and again, representing this hotel group, the DMO they call themselves.
Our group believes, after careful consideration and our own analytical work, as generators of the tax that will largely be used to pay for this, that we believe a multi-purpose center is the best opportunity for us.
So two keys there. They're not in favor of the convention space. We talked about that last week, that they had come forward with a letter basically to everybody saying that. But second is that they consider themselves to be, you know, in a little bit of a privileged position as far as influence here, because they're the ones that generate all the bed tax. They own the hotels that generate the bed tax that the county is going to make its money back on, that essentially they're going to bond against in order to make all of this project happen. And so, you know, having the support of the hoteliers is a big deal. And the hoteliers, of course, are invested in generating room nights, and they're not going to support a plan that doesn't generate the most room nights, because even though the tax is TDT, they make their money by having a lot of, you know, filled hotel space, right? So it's kind of a joint mission that they're both invested in this.
We also believe that because of over 500 plus rooms of new development, either under construction or in the planning stages right now in downtown Pensacola and the related area, that adding a new hotel at this time is not a good idea.
And remember, again, I told you about this last week. You know, Rick Outsman, I think, was the first one to report this. And, you know, but the letter is what the letter is, that they don't support the new hotel. They are the hoteliers. There are enough new hotel rooms coming online soon, up to 500 more. That's enough to handle the additional demand. We don't need a whole new hotel that everybody else kind of keeps talking about, which is, you know, what they're not saying we won't ever. They're just saying not now. That's not vital just yet. Now, if you do a convention center, maybe you do, but they're not arguing for the convention center. They're arguing for the hybrid sports athletic event center.
There's also the Grand Hotel next door to this facility that likely has a giant redevelopment opportunity if everybody can agree to do an expansion and renovation of the Bay Center.
And that's one of the wrinkles, is we have this premier hotel potentially that's just been nothing for, you know, since Sally. You know, that's, God, how Sally was 19, 20? I got to think about this for a second. It was during COVID. It was 20, I think. Because it was the, anyway, it's been like 6 or 7 years, right? And it's just not been available. It all sits there and we all wonder what's happening. And it seems like this mysterious box. Like if aliens were in charge of it, it wouldn't really be that surprising, because we know so little about what goes on behind the doors. So Ted Ent thinks that there's, you know, again, this is the hotel organization. They want the hybrid sports event facility. They don't think we need a new hotel, not immediately. And, you know, they are the people who collect the bed tax. So you kind of have a confluence, right? You have the Legends, who runs the Bay Center. They want to renovate the Bay Center and they want to build an activity event athletic space. Same thing for the DMO. What does Visit Pensacola think? Well, they weren't there. In one of the more weird things that came out of this meeting.
The record, Madam Chair, since you had a question, I think Visit is the organization that's tasked that we give millions of dollars to decide who's going to put heads in beds, who's going to be here. They should be a part of any conversation that we have before we make a decision.
So, unfortunately, Visit Pensacola did not reach out, nor did they send any documentation for consideration. They are tasked with spending the money, not generating the money. So I thought it was important that we have the hoteliers that are tasked with generating that money to be here as well.
Well, I disagree. They are tasked with generating the money. It's an investment. But nevertheless, I mean, we're not going to have that debate.
Yeah. You know, that's right. You know, they are tasked with generating people coming here and spending money in hotels and generating more bed tax, which they then are, you know, they get a slice of that to spend on marketing and so forth. And also, it's money that we would use to be able to bond against to spend on projects like this. It's weird to not have Visit there. They've been in present in all these conversations, and, you know, the executive director, Darren Schaefer, for now, his contract has been non-renewed. He's been arguing for a long time that what they want is to be able to go after the convention market. Pensacola is positioned with great amenities, the beach and downtown. We just don't have enough event space in one place to do, for example, the big ballroom that these big conventions require. And so we cannot get that business. We're having to turn people down all the time. So Visit has been arguing very much for a convention center. And there's other elements to this conversation, too. Things like, you know, convention attendees want to be at the high-end thing, downtown, close to Palafox, where they're going to spend good money on nice restaurants and so forth. Whereas the, you know, sports mom and dad and coach, what do they want? Well, do they really want to, you know, is that what they're doing after the basketball games are over? Or are they just hoping to, you know, grab a couple of beers and go to the hotel, you know? And do they want budget or do they want high-end? Well, they don't care about high-end. And they're trying to conserve money because it's families. And, you know, families are broke to begin with, right? So, basically. So, you know, it's a where to put it, right? We might need an indoor athletic facility, but do we really need it downtown? Or could almost anywhere be? Almost would maybe not downtown be a better place for it. As far as affording it, you're talking about $71 million to upgrade the Bay Center. You're talking about $86 million for the event facility out back. Sheet of Ice is a separate conversation. That's $30-ish million, something like that. And basically what they decided. Okay, we'll come back to this again, you know, next hour because there's some interesting things. Basically what they decided is to, yes, do parts one and two. They didn't quite fully decide, but they made a lot more progress towards that, and the consensus was clear that that's what they're going to do. So they are going to renovate the Bay Center, they are going to build a second building, and then they're going to figure out parking. Maybe the city's going to do it over on the Tech Park. We're not really sure. The last thing is about Visit. It's weird for Visit not to have somebody there. It's also kind of understandable because, you know, Darren is kind of on his way out, and does he really represent Visit anymore since they non-renewed his contract? Yes and no. Who else would speak for them? It's hard to figure that out exactly. So, I don't know. It's an odd situation. It was weird for them not to be there, but that's kind of understandable at the same time. 526 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
When did watching TV go from a way to relax to a complicated chore? Well, if you're sick of huge cable bills or endlessly searching for the show everyone's talking about, then welcome to Philo. Philo is the streaming service that respects both your time and your wallet, without needing to cut the stuff you actually love to watch. This means live TV for more than 70 channels like Hallmark, History, A&E, and Lifetime, plus a huge library of blockbuster movies and classic shows, and an easy-to-use unlimited DVR that lets you save anything you want and skip all the ads when you watch. The best part? You get all this for just $25 a month when you sign up at philo.tv. No hidden fees, no long contracts, just a genuinely great deal. And new users can try it completely free for 7 days. So head to philo.tv, that's philo.tv, and experience a better way to TV. Subscriptions auto-renew at monthly rate plus applicable taxes. Cancel anytime. See terms at philo.tv.
Whether you want to start your education or advance your career, Pensacola State College is the place for you. Join the 91% of PSC students who graduate loan-free and select from over 100 programs, ranging from career certificates to baccalaureate degrees. In addition, Pensacola State has over 300 scholarships to choose from, including cybersecurity. Register today for the summer and fall semester. Go to pensacolastate.edu. That's pensacolastate.edu to learn more.
As a small business owner, what keeps you up at night? Just knowing if your email got hacked or your phone system went down, it could cost you thousands in revenue, as well as your reputation. That's where Data Revolution comes in with their unique position to take care of you and your business IT support, phone systems, cybersecurity, and more. Secure it and sleep better at night by going to datarevs.com. Winner of the 2021 Best of the Bay for IT support, datarevs.com.
When storms pop up fast, it helps to already know where to go.
We've got all the details.
News Radio 92.3. 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
The woman makes the men all pause, and if they got a woman, she might make you forget yours. word to describe her character. But her brain's being washed by an actor. And every real man that tries to approach comes a cold thing comes, it gets just like a rope. I don't think I can handle. She goes channel to channel, cold looking for that hero. She watched Channel Zero.
I love watching country music fan John's face. Well, while he is for the first time perhaps in his entire life exposed to some Public Enemy that's 40 years old.
Oh, that's Public Enemy.
Yeah.
That's, oh, my goodness.
Should watch Channel Zero.
I hadn't heard that in 40 years.
You know, this is the goofy things in the world. There was a band when we were at the University of Illinois that used to, you know, I mean, they were a great band, and they used to do a cover of that, actually, with a good friend of mine that used to sing. She wasn't actually in the band, but they would always bring up Marcy to sing for that, you know, one song or whatever. So it's got a special place in my heart, but whatever. Somebody says, you know, one of the things you see where I get the Hilton ballroom is that it's too limited in space to fit to manage. And that's exactly it. You know, we have a lot of great hotels. We just don't have a great hotel ballroom to handle the single big event. And, you know, you don't really have the ball, you know, the keystone event in like six different rooms.
Fox News, I'm CJ. Papa Peace Talks are set for this week between the U.S. and Iran, but Fox's Alex Hogan has more in a Truth Social post from President Trump.
We're offering a very fair and reasonable deal, and I hope they take it, because if they don't, the United States is going to knock out every single power plant, every single bridge in Iran. No more Mr. Nice Guy. It's time for the Iran killing machine to end.
The U.S. military seizes an Iranian-flagged cargo ship on Sunday. The ship was trying to sneak past the naval blockade in the Gulf of Oman, just outside the Strait of Hormuz. A massive 7.4 magnitude earthquake in the waters off northern coast Japan. Nuclear power plants not affected, say operators, but some bullet train service is suspended. Wall Street watching the tech-heavy NASDAQ red hot, posting 13 straight winning sessions heading into today. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne. We've got 52 degrees right now in Pensacola. We'll get our full forecast with Brooke Richardson, and that's up in just a few minutes. An Escambia County man is in custody after a shooting on Sunday morning in Pensacola. Deputies say a 38-year-old woman was shot and killed near Gulf Breeze Avenue and Gulf Beach Highway. Authorities identified a suspect as 64-year-old James Pelzer, who was taken into custody without incident at the scene. Investigators say the shooting appeared to be isolated. Pelzer's now being held in the Escambia County Jail on a homicide charge with no bond. Three juveniles are facing a burglary charge after a late-night break-in at Big Kahuna's Water and Adventure Park in Destin. The Okaloosa Sheriff's Office says deputies were called to the adventure park for an alarm on Saturday night, where they found multiple people on that property. When suspects spotted law enforcement, they reportedly ran, but deputies were able to secure the area and then use a drone to track them down. Authorities say two 15-year-olds and a 17-year-old were located during the search. Investigators also said ice cream had apparently been taken from the park. They believe the break-in may have been recorded on a GoPro to post on social media. Additional charges and other suspects could still be filed. Congressman Byron Donalds brought his campaign for Florida governor to Pensacola on Friday. He drew about 200 supporters over to the Fish House restaurant. Donalds, who's been endorsed by President Trump and has a 42-point lead in recent polling over his closest Republican rivals, said he wants to build on the conservative wins of the past 30 years. Congressman Jimmy Patronis and Mayor D.C. Reeves were among the local leaders backing him at that event. Florida Senator Rick Scott says President Trump has the right to use military power without a formal war declaration to protect American lives. Speaking on Fox News, Scott said Trump is doing the right thing in the Iran conflict and accused Democrats of lacking credibility in their opposition to military action. Well, Blue Origin successfully launched its new Glenn rocket from Cape Canaveral recently, but apparently placed its communication satellite into the wrong orbit, which made it unusable. It was the third flight for the new Glenn rocket and the first to reuse the rocket's first stage. It's 534 at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. A bit of some drier air this morning with temperatures warming up this afternoon near 76 degrees, mostly sunny skies. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 61. For Tuesday, mostly sunny skies, high near 76. Tuesday night, temperatures dropping near 64. Heading into Wednesday, partly cloudy skies with a small chance of a stray sprinkle, 10% overall, high near 76. Wednesday night, temperatures dropping near 63. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. Again, 52 degrees right now. We've got, looks like, mostly clear skies. Our next news at 6. Breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne. News Radio 92.3. Informative. Local. Dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Energy Secretary Chris Wright said on CNN that gas prices may not drop below $3 a gallon until next year as the U.S.-Iran war continues to wreak havoc on energy markets. AAA data says since the war began, gas prices have soared to $4.04 per gallon on average. Artificial intelligence startup Cursor is in talks to raise a $2 billion fundraising round at an over $50 billion valuation, which does not include the investment. CNBC reports that Andreessen Horowitz is slated to co-lead the new investment round, in which NVIDIA and Thrive Capital are also expected to participate. Amazon's planned 20% reduction in USPS volume is shifting the economics of package delivery. The change leaves fewer shipments to absorb the Postal Service's fixed costs, while the USPS is seeking more surcharges and a hike in the cost of a first-class postage stamp. Logistics experts say the change will likely result in slower service at first and higher costs to follow. Futures are moderately lower. That's Your Money Now.
There is a big difference in the type of service you get from companies that do air duct cleaning. Hi, this is Todd from Gulf Coast Air Care, and I want you to know the difference between a quality job and a blow-and-go duct cleaning job. Let me ask you this. Do you really think you can get a one-carat diamond for 10 bucks? It's just like getting a $99 whole house duct cleaning. There are guidelines from the National Air Duct Cleaners Association and also the Better Business Bureau. A true inspection, cleaning, and restoration of an AC system includes the equipment and ductwork by a licensed and certified company. It's like a full detail for your car instead of the cheapy method of running it through a $5 wash and go. Air conditioners are expensive. Keeping them clean and well-maintained is a guaranteed way to have better health and comfort. So you decide what works for you, the $5 wash and go or a full detail top to bottom. At Gulf Coast Air Care, we take pride in the certifications and the licenses that we hold. If you want the best quality and award-winning customer service, you can find us on the web at gulfcoastaircare.com or call 934-2768.
Did you know? Florida West Economic Development Alliance partners with local and state stakeholders to compete for companies that are considering Escambia County, the city of Pensacola, and the town of Century. These jobs, wages, and investment deliver real returns for our residents. These outcomes strengthen Escambia County's economy and protect taxpayer interests through disciplined, results-driven economic development. Learn more at FloridaWestEDA.com.
Spring is a great time of the year for gardening, whether it's fertilizing the lawn, pruning, planting shrubs and summer blooming plants, and of course, tending to that vegetable garden. This is Mike Wiggins. If you've got spring gardening questions, we've got answers on the News Radio Garden Line every Tuesday morning at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. And if you miss us on Tuesday, then catch the Encore Edition every Saturday morning at 9.
Sponsored by Pensacola Hardware and Blue Sky Landscaping.
You don't stop needing information just because you left the car. That's why News Radio 92.3 goes with you. On your phone, on your computer, wherever you are. Stream us live or download the News Radio 92.3 app. Stay connected to local news, breaking updates, and conversations that matter even when you're not near a radio.
And that's a good thing.
It's News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Informative.
Informative.
Local.
Local.
Dependable.
Dependable.
For those of you who aren't familiar, when bad people do bad things and the police department have an opportunity to engage with those individuals, sometimes we're able to take those funds or those items and repurpose them. Specifically in this case, we recently did a vaping task force. As a result of that, there were some funds that were incurred from those. If a drug dealer, for example, has $2,000 on them in the process mixed in with their drugs that they're selling, the police department has the opportunity to petition to the state, to the attorney general's office, to take those funds and then utilize them for the city.
This is Chief of Police in Milton, Jen Frank. This is going back actually about a month in the Milton City Council meeting. I know David reported on this already, but I thought it was an interesting thing to think about, especially with this horrific shooting that took place in Shreveport over the weekend. And I just don't really want to talk about it at all. But, you know, you've heard some of the things in Fox News. This man who shot, killed 8 kids, and, you know, from they're kind of like 7 of them are from his wife and his girlfriend, and it's just not clear all the details, but just horrible. But, you know, one of the worst mass shootings we've had in several years in the entire United States. It's an atrocious thing to think about. But it does make you think, because, you know, police are often tasked with responding to incidents where people are very, you know, well-armed and dangerous and shooting at them. And do they have the capability to respond to that appropriately? And what she's asking from the city council is for the use of some of this law enforcement trust fund money, drug seizure money, to buy rifles for all of the MPD police officers.
We've successfully been able to, it's under what's called the Forfeiture Act. We've successfully been able to take funds or property from individuals who are engaging in significant crimes. And just to be clear, these are felony level crimes. We're not talking misdemeanors. These are significant crimes, specifically drug related crimes or substance misuse crimes. That fund has been deposited into the city coffers.
So they've got the money.
What we're specifically looking is to permission to expend up to $5,000 to utilize that money that we receive from the Forfeiture Act to purchase some rifles. As you are currently aware, we do not have any department rifles at this time. In today's day and age, that is absolutely unacceptable. I've come before you to say that previously. Active shooter incidents, we've responded to armed barricaded subjects, high-risk felony apprehensions, and we are putting our officers in danger every single day that they respond without the proper equipment. The expenditure of up to $5,000, I have a friend of mine who happens to work for a gun manufacturing company who is offering to provide us with rifles at what's called below blue label pricing. There is a state level pricing, there's a pricing for law enforcement, and they are going to give them to us, give is not a correct word, they would be willing to sell them to us at direct cost. So they would make no money and it would be a direct cost. Essentially a gift to the city for any of that additional expenditure.
Yeah, and, you know, it might come as a surprise to think that Milton doesn't have any of these rifles at all, but I don't, might get out on my skis here. I don't think, you know, Milton doesn't have a SWAT team. I mean, the county, you know, Santa Rosa Sheriff, and obviously, you know, Pensacola does and Scambia does, but Milton's not that big of an agency. And, you know, they've got like 21 officers, you know, and they haven't had a need to have something like that. But at the same time, you know, you might think, well, in the modern era, how do they not have rifles? Well, until not that long ago, I mean, it really hasn't been all that long since the standard firearm for police was a revolver and a shotgun, maybe. I mean, you know, that was normal for the longest time. And then, of course, you know, in the latter half of the 20th century, most of your police agencies upgraded from revolvers to semi-automatic weapons, you know, the pistols that they use now. And they, you know, they went to Glocks, and now a lot of them have gone over to SIGs. But that's, you know, that was a big shift. And also the shift from shotguns to rifles because of mass shootings, especially where assailants had their own, you know, AR-15s typically, or that type of weapon, or, you know, sometimes other things, other rifles. And they needed to have the ability to respond in kind. And even Pensacola Police Department, you know, they didn't have rifles except for the SWAT team until Tommy Leiter was the chief of police. And he was one, you know, he was the one who said, let's have rifles. And we need them in every car. And that's what they have now. But they didn't for the longest time. So it's not all that weird. You know what I mean? It's not all that odd. But basically, you never know what you're going to deal with. And, you know, you need to have that level of weaponry if you're going to handle some of these problems.
And it would not take any money out of our current budgeted. Rifles are not a regularly budgeted item. Therefore, it meets the forfeiture justification, which you'll notice in your packet, and would allow our officers to begin to start to become more equipped. This is the start. To be clear, I believe every single officer in our department should be properly equipped with a rifle to respond. As it stands, if an active shooter incident could happen at 2 o'clock in the morning, could happen at 8 o'clock at night at a basketball game. It could happen at 1:30 in the afternoon in the middle of math class. But for this moment, we need to utilize the funds that have been made available to us through the Forfeiture Act. So we're asking for a request to expend up to $5,000, which would be for the rifles, the slings, and the sights.
And just not to, you know, belabor the point, but even like at the Escambia County Sheriff's Office, when they responded to the terrorist attack at NAS Pensacola, the three who went in the front door of the building, Mike Hoyland was one of them, Sergeant Hoyland. As I recall, there was one rifle for the three of them. Like, basically, you know, I think Hoyland kind of took it from somebody else because he's the much more experienced shooter. And, you know, it just, it hasn't been standard and isn't even yet standard for everybody. And it certainly hasn't been standard for all that long to have, you know, this level of capability, you know, to be able to respond to these kinds of problems.
So the Milton Police Department has 21 officers. I believe it is best practice, and from a safety standpoint, that all 21 officers should be properly equipped as, again, running into an active shooter incident or anything along those lines, to send our officers in with a handgun when we know that the majority of these incidents, we are competing against individuals who have rifles or long guns. So at the end of the day, it would be 21.
Right, and if you're in, you know, 4 or 5 now, okay, at about $1,000 apiece, and then eventually everybody to have one. And that's not just for the rifle. That's for, you know, everything that goes along with it. You know, because you might think, well, for $1,000, I can get it. You know, well, not with the sight and the gear that they need anyway. And, you know, responding, you know, you're the one officer on duty and there's a basketball game. You know, it's the old problem with police is, you know, police are minutes away when seconds matter. And so the fewer seconds you have for any given police officer who might be on duty and to have the weaponry that they need to handle the threat, you know, you're cutting down response time and cutting down not just a body on the scene, but a body with the right kind of equipment and gear on the scene. So they went ahead and said, yes, of course, this makes sense. So that's in the works. I also thought, and I, you know, I had not had a chance to share this. This is kind of why I'm doing it. They did something interesting that I had never heard before. As many different law enforcement functions and interviews as I've done. Have you ever heard of the police officer's oath, John? Are you familiar with that?
The oath?
The oath, mm-hmm. You know, like you have the Boy Scout oath, you have the oath of office, you
right.
Have, you know, the oath of allegiance to your country, and pledge of allegiance is a kind of oath, right? Well, this was interesting. She was swearing in a new police officer to the force. I don't remember if it was one or maybe more than one. But she read what she called the police officer's oath, and I had never heard it. This takes about a minute and 10 minutes, something, seconds, something like that. But it's interesting, okay? That's why I wanted to share it with you.
Law enforcement code of ethics. As a law enforcement officer, my fundamental duty is to serve mankind, to safeguard lives and property, to protect the innocent against deception, the weak against oppression or intimidation, and the peaceful against violence or disorder, and to respect the constitutional rights of all men to liberty, equality, and justice. I will keep my private life unsullied as an example to all, maintain courageous calm in the face of danger, scorn, or ridicule, develop self-restraint, and be constantly mindful of the welfare of others, honest in thought and deed, in both my personal and official life. I will be exemplary in obeying the laws of the land and the regulations of the department. Whatever I see or hear of a confidential nature or that is confided to me in my official capacity will be kept secret unless revelation is necessary in the performance of my duties. I will never act officiously or permit personal feelings, prejudices, animosities, or friendships to influence my decisions. With no compromise for crime and with relentless prosecution of criminals, I will enforce the law courteously and appropriately without fear or favor of violence and never accepting gratuities. I recognize the badge of my office as a symbol of public faith, and I accept it as a public trust to be held so long as I am true to the ethics of the police service.
I mean, that's pretty stout.
You know, I've never heard that before. Neither.
She called it, I think, the code of ethics. I called it the oath. I'm sorry about that. But yeah, good, right, true. I mean, inspiring, a high standard. Certainly, the kind of thing that we expect from our officers. And you know, it's just, I don't know. It really caught my attention when I heard her read that, and I thought, oh, good for her. You know, I think that she's doing a lot of really good stuff. By the way, one of the things that came from that same meeting was, you know, coming to getting permission from council to spend a grant to develop an evidence storage facility, which is always a problem. You know, there was a few years ago, I think Escambia had to do a whole one, and gosh, I want to say PPD had to renovate theirs as well. But, you know, she says, like often happens, we don't keep up with the ongoing maintenance and infrastructure, and then we're kind of behind. And then the evidence with which we make cases can become vulnerable to damage or destruction, and that's not good.
Do recognize that our current evidence room does not meet standards. As you all know, we recently did an FDLE audit. During that audit, we discovered what we already knew, a combination of lack of physical security to the building, lack of meeting hazmat requirements. We do not have a current drying room. We also do not have separate facilities for properly securing firearms, properly double locking and securing narcotics and other elements to that.
So it's not that they don't have a place, but, you know, the 25-year-old shed out back is not really up to modern standards. And this is all part of a Lowe's grant. It was kind of interesting because there was another project pitched as well, and they were being asked not to fund it. It's a Lowe's thing, but being asked to offer their support for it. And they, I think, if I remember correctly, they kind of voted to support both without picking between them. But, you know, and certainly the people who are offering the second one, like, I don't know, they want to interfere with the police getting their grant. You know, which is, I mean, okay, well, then take your project and go home. I did think it was kind of interesting. Ed Spears made a very – he's the city manager. He made a very cagey mention that there might be other projects that would come that might not be so popular.
But I do believe, and not to be argumentative, but I do believe I would bring these letters of support to council because there may be some causes you may not wish to put the city's name on. I'll just leave it at that.
And he did just leave it at that. But, you know, the idea was, can that staff not just approve the letters, you know? And he said, well, there might be ones that come here that y'all might want to say no to, so I don't want to speak on your behalf. And he didn't say anything more than that, and so we're left speculating what might be the other proposals to get the Lowe's grant funding. 550 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you need to work on the plumbing, the air conditioning, the heating, the electrical, maybe a generator, either you have one, needs maintained, or you want to install one, Peden, they do all that stuff. Electrical, heating, plumbing, air conditioning. Started with air conditioning back in the 60s, and then Robert Peden expanded from there in Panama City to Tallahassee in the east and Pensacola to the west, and added lines like, you know, electrical and plumbing throughout the years. And then recently, in the last couple of years, have gone all the way west into Baldwin County and even now into Mobile. So two time zones across two states along the whole Gulf Coast. Peden will take care of that stuff with a satisfaction guarantee on any of the work that they do. Good products, good installation, good people. And this spring, you can get 2 years of smart care for free with any new air conditioning system you purchase from Peden. That includes a scheduled maintenance, priority service, and 15% off repairs. That's all included. Call or book online at Peden, P-E-A-D-E-N.com.
Bands on the Beach, presented by the Santa Rosa Island Authority, happens every Tuesday night at 7 at the Gulfside Pavilion on Pensacola Beach. Bring a blanket or a lawn chair and relax and enjoy the sunset with your favorite bands. This week, it's the Smokestack Band, a trio of musicians that have been playing all over Pensacola for 50-plus years. Join them for a multicultural musical experience. It's happening at Bands on the Beach this Tuesday night at 7. Remember, no pets or glass allowed.
Visit Pensacola is home for all things Pensacola. I'm Nicole Stacy, Vice President of Visit Pensacola. Join us on the Pensacola Expert Panel this week as we discuss what is next for our community. This summer, get tips on the Blue Angels, beaches, festivals, and all things fun. You don't want to miss it.
The thing, too, that I love about where we live and our beaches is that they're family beaches.
Friday at 9, let us show you the way to beach on News Radio 92.3.
Tune in to Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, Sundays at 1 with Paul Roberts. Find out how their certified advisors can help you enjoy your retirement income. Financial security is about more than investments. Roberts Wealth can help you live your values and trust your future planning every step of the way. Don't miss Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, this Sunday at 1 p.m.
Investment advisory services offered by Foundations Investment Advisor Services, LLC, SEC. Registered advisors.
Something important happens.
You don't have time to wait.
Breaking news lives here.
Here.
On News Radio 92.3, 95.3 and AM 1620.
I'm kind of psychic. I have a fifth sense. What do you mean? It's like I have ESPN or something.
The joke buried in there is I have a fifth sense. Yes, dear, that's fantastic. Well done. Now, I know 90210 is not necessarily the most famous album from Yes, but it is one I grew up on, and I love that. I almost like that was a great song. Oh, was that off of Big Generator? I can get confused. Anyway, old people ruminating on their memories. 5:54 here on News Radio 92.3. What, John? What's that mean?
I'm agreeing with you.
You don't need to agree so enthusiastically. Well, oh my God. Okay, this is maybe a frivolous topic at some point, but you're not as much a movie guy, so maybe this does not plague you, but the first like 20 minutes of any movie, my wife and I are always talking with it. Who's that person from? What have they been in? Who's they? Like, I know the X-ray gives you the cheat code or whatever, but you know, I feel like connecting with movies a lot of times is connecting with how I know those actors and other projects and who directed whatnot. And once I get that straight in my head, then I can follow the movie.
But then
same for music. Like, what album was that on? What track number was that on that album? And was it even an album that I was listening to at the time? You know, because
did I even have the CD or cassette tape?
Yeah, vinyl in my case for most of them. Oh, yeah, wow. I know, right?
Look at you.
5:55 on Wiki. All right. We did poke a hole into an Iranian-flagged vessel near the Strait of Hormuz over the weekend. And by poke a hole in it, I mean the Marines shot at it, blew a piece of the engine room wall out or something, and then, you know, the Marines seized it. And now Iran says they're going to kill us real bad this time for it or whatever.
I'm scared.
I don't know. No, who can know? Who can know what's going on over there? So, you know, we're in the middle of the open or closed Hormuz Strait, hokey pokey. The ceasefire is supposed to, I mean, what do you want me to tell you? You know, we're very capable. We're in a war. I mean, it's not a declared war, but, you know, what else would you describe it? Well, it's a non-war war. Okay, go to Orwell school for me. So, you know, we got the ceasefire ends in 2 days. What's going to happen then? There's supposedly, you know, talks are in the works. And okay, all right.
Not attending.
Yeah, I'll tell you when I know more, I suppose. Let's see, 4-3-7-16-20. Oh, this is actually really big story. This is probably, of all the things going on in the United States, maybe even the world, right? In the United States, this is probably the biggest story, and I don't know how many people are going to even report on it. So you think, well, how can that be? Andrew, what do you know? I just know that I read a lot of different sources. And do you remember we've done a lot of interviews with Henry Kelly because he's an expert on tariffs? And you remember the tariffs case at the Supreme Court? You know, President Trump put all these tariffs on these countries, and the IEEPA, does that ring a bell for you, that particular kind of tariff or tariff justification that there's a national emergency and the president has the ability, which was originally designed to deal with, like, when we're at war with somebody, that we can put tariffs on them so we're not simultaneously at war and supplying a country? That's kind of the original justification for that. And the president thought, oh, I can use that for anything. I'll just say it's an emergency and here we go. Well, and then they went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, no. No. So all those tariffs, or most of those tariffs, now some of them had gotten, you know, negotiated and they were different, but that, you know, a large number of those tariffs basically got thrown out by the Supreme Court. And then the question was, because the president had been working on getting alternative justifications for a lot of them, and it had to do with the filing and the process and the time. I don't want to go into all the details. It's very complicated. But essentially, the president was trying to do alternate justification for a lot of these tariffs. Okay, well, the Supreme Court said no. And then what happens if the tariffs are unjust? Refunds. And you remember we talked to Henry Kelly about getting in line for the refunds and putting your notice for the refunds, and we're talking about a fair amount of money. So, John, how much money in tariff refunds does the federal government owe? Take a stab.
A couple of billion.
Yeah, how many billion?
Like 20.
$168 billion.
Okay, well, that was a little bit more than I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so quick math, that's what, like 10 aircraft carriers, like our whole fleet, basically?
So we can just go sign up for it and...
Nope. You... but there is a website that launches today.
Okay, what is it?
Give me back my tariff money. So the Florida GDP, like the entire domestic product of Florida in a year, is $1.7 trillion. Give or take. So this is like a tenth of the GDP of all the state of Florida is going to be refunded or is slated to be refunded. And so really the first group of that is two-thirds, $127 billion. But it's a massive amount of money that the United States government has collected that's going to have to go back. I don't know if that includes or doesn't include interest and penalties. I just don't know whether it does. But also, then what happens to that money? Because, you know, a lot of these importers have passed on costs to subsidiaries or purchasers, or places like Costco or Target or FedEx have raised prices. And will the people who bought the, you know, higher priced chicken broth at Target, you know, or the higher priced tires at Walmart, are they going to be getting a refund when the money flows to Walmart and Target and Costco, or are they just going to keep the money? Now, some of the big retailers have already said, no, we're just going to kind of spread the love by lower prices. But, you know, if you were paying extra for things because of tariffs, you're the one who paid for it.
I know. I got a long list.
Yeah. I mean, you know, every single one of us is, you could argue, entitled to the tariff dividend. But unlikely that any of us are really going to see that. So it's, anyway, that website opens today, and it's $168 billion, so it's a buck or two.